So this topic dovetails with the previous one, and Pastor Femi has covered some of what I would have said to you, so he's made my job easier. I just want to concentrate on the word preservation, preservation of the Quran. To me, this topic is a perfect example of what I call brazen Islam. Muslims make claims that are obviously empty, without any substance, but they keep repeating them, you know, straight faced and so on. So one of them, for instance, is Islam is a religion of peace. Well, everybody knows that's not true, but they will still repeat it brazenly, proudly. It's just brazen Islam. This is another one, the preservation of the Quran. And as a rule, when people keep insisting on something, it's probably because they themselves know it's not true. They have doubt. And that appears repeatedly in the life of Muhammad. Kept insisting he's from Quraysh when we know he wasn't from Quraysh. Another subject, yeah? So just to give you a flavor of how problematic this is, and how contradictory, self-contradictory Islam is, it is said that near the end of the life of Muhammad in 632, he made two contradictory statements. One is actually in the Quran, "Today I have perfected your religion for you." Okay? So in 632, say 2 months before he died, he said to the Muslims, "Now you have everything you need. I've perfected your religion for you." Okay? Now, when it came to his death, whilst he was on his deathbed, what did he say? He said, "Bring me pen and paper, so I will write you something after which you will never err, you'll never go wrong." Now, hang on, did you not perfect their religion 2 months ago? And now you're saying, oh, there's something more after which you'll never go wrong. Well, does that mean if you don't give us this additional material, we will go wrong? You see the contradiction? And this is part of the crisis that Muslims have. So they insist on the preservation because they know it is wrong, okay? And they tie themselves into knots on this subject. So we're going to show you how to deal with this. So I'm giving you the knowledge. The style is down to the Holy Spirit. The situation, how you share it, is between you and the Lord, okay? So the basis of the Quranic claim comes from a verse which says that we have sent down not the Quran as dhikr, and indeed we will be its guardians. Now, as usual, the clear Quran is not very clear. Okay, the Quran claims to be clear. What does as dhikr mean? It literally means the remembrance, something you remember. Now, do you remember something that's about to happen, or do you remember something that's already happened? Memory belongs to the past. It preserves the past. What has happened? What books have come before the Quran? The Old Testament and the New Testament. Okay? So strictly speaking, Allah has promised to preserve the Bible, not the Quran. But some Muslims translate it as the Quran. So the Arabic says az-zikr. It doesn't say the Quran. Which shows how much liberty Muslims take with the non-Arabic Quran. I've written a book on this, given lots of examples, that true Islam lost in translation. Okay? So when they translate, they take so many liberties with the truth. And it said falsehood cannot come to it from before it or behind it. So, because it's preserved. So take another verse. It says, it is a glorious Quran preserved in a tablet, fi lawhin mahfuz, and that is also called Ummul Kitab, the mother of the book. In other words, what you have here was born out of what's kept in heaven. It's eternal, it's near God's throne. And of course, that's a contradiction. We know it can't be true, because how many times has the Quran changed? Well, did the lawh mahfuz also change with it? But anyway, that's these are the claims that give rise to the doctrine of the preservation. The Quran apparently has been preserved by Allah. Now, how did it come down? If it's preserved up there, how did it come down? As we know, it came down through, that's what they claim, from Allah to Gabriel to Muhammad. And there are many stories. Did it come to Muhammad all at once, or did it come slowly? Muslims argue. Some say it came into his soul all at once in one night, and he slowly verbalized it. And Gabriel will visit him once a year and revise it with him. And the year he died, 632, Gabriel came down twice and revised it with him to make sure there's no error in it. Well, those who know it know poor Gabriel has done a bad job. Now, so they claim that the Quran was meant for tawatur, for verbal, it wasn't meant to be written, which again is a contradiction. So how did the early Muslims put the Quran together? They put it from tawatur, which is the memory. It's been passed on from one generation to another, verbally, orally, but also in writing, okay? So neither were adequate. Now, when it comes to the oral tradition, there are two classes. There's tawatur, which is apparently reliable because it's been said by many people in whom you can trust, or ahad, which is like a verse in the Quran that is only supported by one or two, very few people. So oral tradition that has a lot of support from many people is called tawatur. If it has little support or only one witness, is called ahad. And that's a big job. How do you tell which is which? Because what's the meaning of few? Three, four, five, six? We don't know. There's one verse that we was mentioned earlier, the stoning and the suckling of the adult verse, which has been preserved in hadith, okay? So why is it not included in the Quran? So there's a question of tawatur. Okay, let's look at what Muslims claim. I'm just going to give you a few examples. Here is Al-Qurtubi saying, Allah has preserved his book from any alteration, so no changes, no additions, and no loss. It is safeguarded until the day of judgment. So we'll look at these in detail shortly. And some are even more brazen. Not a single letter, imagine, of the Quran has been lost. And it remains exactly as revealed. See how brazen this is? There's another claim. This is the Quran that we read today contains the same exact words that were revealed to the Prophet Muhammad. And there's another quote from the introduction to Pixel's translation of the Quran. It says there has been no tampering of the text, and the original purity of the language has stayed undefiled. Such brave claims to make. So the traditional Muslim narrative says the Quran is Allah's word, actually some would say only word of God, given to Muhammad through Gabriel, revealed either instantly or over 22 years. It is apparently clear, Quranan Arabian Mabinan, Mabin, which means clear. And we ask, why do they have tafsir? Arabic, but it contains a lot of Hebrew, Aramaic, Ethiopic vocabulary. Has no contradiction, but they have something called naskh, abrogations. So it's full of contradictions. They say, oh no, they're not contradictions, they're abrogations. So Allah one day says, this is my word, and next week he says, oh no, actually I found a better word for you. So forget this one. This is a new revelation. He's like a doctor who today gives you penicillin and says, you know what, next week, erythromycin is more effective. Here's a new prescription. Bad, bad doctor. I would never register with such a GP. Okay? So, and Nasr in itself is a point of disagreement. Some say there are only five verses that have been abrogated. Others say there is 238 or 48, I can't remember. So you'll never find agreement amongst Muslim scholars, but the very nature of naskh is that it contradicts the preservation theory or claim. Brother Gabriel.
When they abrogate a verse, Is it no longer binding, or is it no longer found in the Quran?
No, it's found in the Quran. That's another point. So if it's abrogated, why it is still in the Quran, which ties up with the conversation we're having about hadith da'if, they still have it in there. Why? Yeah. Nor does the Quran say to you, by the way, this is abrogated, this is the abrogator. So you don't know which is abrogated and which is the abrogator. And again, it gives rise to arguments between Muslims, which goes back to the claim it's a clear Quran. It's a very confusing Quran. So the concept of a tablet in heaven, what's the point if it's in heaven? What on earth is the point? And was the tablet in heaven abrogated at the same time as the one on earth? What's the point? Again, it's an incredible claim. Co-eternal with Allah, that is a very serious claim to make. And Islam has been divided ever since those days. The thing is, Islam came, was imposed on an illiterate people. The Arabs of Arabia were illiterate. We had no written language. And Islam, or Muhammad, had a complex, an inferiority complex. The Jews had writing, they had a written book. The Aramaic people had writings, and they had the New Testament, of course, and the Old Testament. So you'll see the concept of Ahlul Kitab keeps coming up. Why is it an issue? And I think Arabs decided, look, the Jews, our Aramaic cousins, our Jewish cousins have books, they've had prophets, the Jews had Moses, the Christians had Jesus, we must have our own prophet and our own book. Muhammad was obsessed with books. You need to read the seerah. And so the idea of the preserved tablet is that John of Damascus, I think it was, who used to debate with Muslims, he would say to them, is Jesus Allah's word? They had to say yes, because it says so in the Quran and in the Hadith. Yes. And then the next question is, Allah's word eternal or made? Is it eternal? If it's made, then it must have had a beginning and an end. Now, if they said it was eternal, then they had to admit Jesus is eternal. And who is eternal but God? Okay, so he snookered them. If they said it's made, it's created, which sometimes, the Quran says Jesus is created, like Adam, then the Quran is created, then it can't be eternal. Can you see that? He really snookered them. And there broke out a kind of a division amongst Muslims and Mu'tazila and so on for a couple of centuries. I think they were the winners and then they lost it. So the average Muslim now will have to say it is eternal. The Quran is eternal. And so we need to hold them to their word. If God's word is eternal, then Jesus is eternal, then Jesus is God. Amen? Learn that. And no Muslim can say, I don't believe that. Well, you don't choose what you believe if you're a Muslim. Of all the religions in the world, you have no choice. And there are hudud, you know, there's a punishment. If you say, I don't believe in the Quran, I don't believe the Hadith, there's no choice, okay? So that's a silly argument. One problem with the preservation of the Quran, if it's preserved in heaven, why can't we see it here on earth? There's no original copy of the Quran anywhere on earth. Is there an excuse? Do they have an excuse? When did the Quran come to earth? Apparently, 7th century. The Muslims were the most powerful force in the world. They had access to all the technology. They governed all the big cities in the east, Cairo, Baghdad, Sham, Damascus, Iran, the Iranians and the Aramaic people were amongst the most educated. You had the Byzantines. You know, they had access to technology and skill. They managed to apparently translate all the Greek words, they didn't. It was the Jews and the Aramaic people. Okay, so why didn't you keep a copy of the Quran? What is your excuse? The truth is, Islam did not begin as a religion. It started as a political movement, which added a religious flavor to control the minds of people. But if you believe in the preservation of the Quran, you have a big problem with not having an original copy. Okay? So, what we have isn't original. What we have are what called codices, but are not original codices. And I've summarized some of them. I think I've got two slides. But I will give you the slides. You had reference to the Topkapi Codex from our sister Beth. So the story is when Uthman, the third caliph, did the, what we call the second recension. The Quran was collated twice, more times, but the first time under the first caliph, Abu Bakr, it was put away, given to Hafsa, and then when Uthman governed, he asked her to bring it back to him, and he revised it again. That's called the second recension, the Uthmanic recension, 650-something. And so all the codices we have today are apparently Uthmanic. That is the Muslim claim, okay? But so I've added the Birmingham folio, but what I want you to notice is the second column, none of them are complete, okay? We do not even have a copy of a copy of a copy of a complete Quran. And even the one that says 99% has been patched up, okay? So Muslims who preach the preservation of the Quran do not have a single unoriginal complete copy of the Quran when they govern the world for centuries. What is their excuse? When we have, I'll come to you in a minute, we have bits of manuscripts from earlier centuries or of the Gospels, despite Christianity surviving under persecution for 200 or 300 years before it became popular. Anyone caught with a copy of the letters of Paul or the gospel was killed under Roman rule. Whereas now you have Islam killing people who don't believe in their religion. They had the power, and yet they do not have an original copy. So these codices have been studied by who? Muslims have chosen kuffar to study their codices. Kuffar. Why? Because Islam does not promote knowledge. Islam tells you mustn't ask questions because they may harm you. Islam forbids inquiry. You must accept things, which answers one of the questions you asked earlier. Islam rules by fear. It recruits by the sword and retains by fear. So the moment you say the Shahada, you're a Muslim. And there's no way out. You may have said it accidentally, but you cannot apostatize. You'd be dead. So they've used these kuffar, which again is another contradiction. Geert Purwin is probably the most famous because he dealt with the Sana'a manuscript, which is supposedly the oldest manuscript of the Quran. And then you have Francois de Roche and Geert Purwin's wife, Elizabeth Purwin. They've all studied these manuscripts, the Sana'a manuscript, which is the oldest, and they found it's full of problems. And so the government of Yemen just clamped down, no more research, okay? Because, you know, we know too much now. And what they found is palimpsest, which is really leather, animal skin, had two scripts. There was a lower script, which is the one that had been washed off, but not fully, and an upper script of the same Quran. But the lower and upper script differed in thousands of places. And one Muslim scholar said, oh no, the palimpsest was used by students to practice. That's why the difference. For a start, for you to have a palimpsest, you had to be very, very rich. A student can't afford to have a palimpsest. You have to kill 100 sheep and process their skin to make a palimpsest. So it's a false claim. And if so, why has it been preserved as if it were holy? Student work isn't holy. So the Uthmanic codices we have today differ in many places. Our sister Beth mentioned in her seminar yesterday that two Muslim scholars from Turkey, and one of them actually had a political position, and he even represents Turkey in Egypt now. You'll see him in big Islamic conferences sitting right at the front. So Ikmal al-Din and Dr. Tayyar Altıkılıç, very, very famous. So this is what they concluded. The manuscript exhibits, that's the top copy, okay, which is apparently Osmanic, exhibits characteristics of early Kufic script. Kufic means it comes from Iraq. So the Kufic script is a later script. The early script is called Al-Ma'il or Hijazi. So you see the alphabet is sort of, it's all angled, whereas the Kufic is square. So you can tell from the style of writing which era the codex came from. So the Kufic script is a later script. So it can't be original, okay? It can't be Osmanic. So they said the presence of diacritical marks and vowel signs suggest a period of standardization that occurred post-Osmanic. What do they mean? I'll come to that later in more detail. But the Arabic language had no script until maybe the early 6th century. We borrowed the script from our Aramaic brothers and sisters. And Al-Anbat, the Nabataeans, were the first to adapt the Aramaic into Arabic, but it was very primitive. It did not accurately represent what you pronounced. So we didn't have vowels. Now we have vowels and short vowels. Huh? So you can have an oo or an o. That's a short vowel. So an a or an a. A is a short vowel. So these oo, a, e are called short vowels or diacritics. These were not present when the Quran came down. So if we had an original copy of the Quran, it would not have these diacritics. Now, if you find them in the top copy, it means the top copy cannot be original, okay? Because it contains something that came later in the 8th century. They also concluded, the authors acknowledged the absence of any surviving original Mus'haf directly linked to Uthman. In other words, the top copy, like all the other copies, cannot possibly be Osmanic. It came later. It's a copy of a copy of a copy. All right? We have none of Uthman's Mus'hafs, nor do we have any copies of those Mus'hafs. Okay? Now, preservation? What preservation? There is no preservation. And this is coming out of the mouths of two powerful Muslim, Turkish Muslim scholars, okay? Widely respected.
What do they think themselves of?
Who?
These guys, when they're saying it, are they just deliberately misleading?
I think there's two types.
Do they have that sincerity?
I think the leaders deliberately mislead, and the common people, just loyal. Muslims are much more loyal to their religion than we are. That's something we can learn from Muslims. Muslims are more loyal to their God than we are. And so they just blindly follow. So the average Muslim has not read the Quran or the Hadith or the Tafsir. What they do is basically the Imam hears from the scholars, picks and chooses which scholar he prefers. Basically, the Islam has a big meat mincer. It puts the Quran, Hadith, Tafsir, Tariq, Sunnah, and maybe, what do you call them, these fatwas, in this big mincer, and what comes out is what they feed their people, okay? That's the truth. So, but we need to make our Muslim neighbors aware of their true religion. Yeah, we need to make them aware of these things. And many Muslims, when they confront these facts, they are shocked. So, now, so Muhammad received the verses orally, audially. So he heard these verses from Gabriel. So when he received a verse, he would say, he had many scribes. He would say, oh, write this down for me. Okay? That is according to Hadith. I won't go over what Pastor Femi has already stated. But then they chose a young, maybe Jewish boy, maybe an Aramaic boy, Zayd ibn Thabit, to collect the Quran. He did it twice, once under Bakr, Abu Bakr, and again under Uthman. And he said, so I started looking for the Quran and collecting it from what? What was written on? Palmed stalks, thin white stones, and also from the men who knew it by heart. So it was collected from both script and from memory, and that's a big problem. We don't know where they were kept, we don't know how genuine they are, and those who committed to memory, we all know what happens to human memory. It is imperfect. There's no way you're going to preserve anything in memory and have the original. And here's one of the scribes of Muhammad. You know what he said? His name is Abdullah ibn Abi Sarh. He said, Muhammad knows nothing but what I have written for him. In other words, and there's another hadith, and he said, you know, Muhammad would say, write this ayah. He said, I would write it and complete it in such a way. And Muhammad would say, oh, that's exactly what I meant. So he lost his faith in Muhammad and actually became a Christian. Okay? I'm coming to that. So he had to run away. At the time, Muhammad was in Medina. When Muhammad conquered Mecca, you know, Muhammad apparently was chased out of Mecca. That's the victim complex. He chose to leave. And then when he was strong, he went back to Mecca, was defeated, signed a treaty, went back and got strong, came back to Mecca and conquered it. So when he conquered it, this guy was one of 10 people he would have killed. Okay? But Ibn Abi Sarh was a suckling brother to one of the caliphs, I think Uthman, I can't remember. And Uthman had to plead with Muhammad to keep him. In fact, this guy went and climbed on the covering of a Kaaba, which in Arab custom means you have no right to kill me. You know, I'm pleading with God. I've got God's protection. But Muhammad wouldn't respect that. He would kill him. But for Uthman saying, look, he's my brother in suckling. They were suckled by the same wet nurse. But he would have killed him otherwise. On that occasion, Muhammad killed 6 other people who didn't have that privilege. But so how can you rely on the Quran when you know at least one of the scribes was just putting what seemed right to him in there, and apparently that was God's word? Where is preservation? We know about the sheep and the goat. So the question is, okay, the verse was lost because this, we don't know if it was a sheep or a chicken, ate it. But the verse has survived in the memory and in writing. Why is it not in the Quran? And the other thing to say is, even though it's not in the Quran, it is still practiced. In most Muslim countries, certainly in Iraq, in Iran, in Pakistan, Afghanistan, they do stone people. Pastor, you're going to say something. Oh, okay. Yeah. Umar ibn al-Khattab, the second caliph, he was like the Peter in the New Testament. Apostle Peter was very loud and aggressive and so on. He said, had it not been that people would say Umar had added to the book of Allah, I would have written it into the Quran. The verse about the stoning and the suckling. He said, you know, I know Muhammad said it. It was inspired, God's inspired word. So preservation, what preservation? Another question comes when Muhammad was alone. He didn't have his scribes with him all the time, and he received verses in isolation. What happened to those verses? And then he admits forgetting verses. He said, I used to forget a verse that I had received from the Quran. And that's in Sahih Bukhari, the top class of hadith. So what happened to those verses? How can you say the Quran was preserved? Muhammad was sometimes confused. In fact, when the Quran came to him first, he thought he was demon-possessed. He went to his Christian wife, Khadija, and she had to do a test by revealing her thigh, because, you know, angels don't like women's thighs. Obviously, they're not very masculine. So she kept revealing more of her thigh, and, you know, nothing happened. So, yeah, she said that this is of Allah. Yeah, you're not mad. This is of Allah. So how can it be preserved? We're always asking that question. How can it be preserved? Now, there's a big question. Some Muslims say, you know what? We know the Quran we have is original because Muhammad collated the Quran. We had a complete Quran before Muhammad died. Well, first of all, there's no support for this. There's no evidence for it. But there's evidence against it. Okay? So Abu Bakr, after the death of the Prophet, that's the first caliph, and the loss of many Qurra, those who committed the Qur'an to memory died, and with them was lost much of the Qur'an. Preservation, eh? They died in Yamama. He decided to collect the Qur'an in one volume. So if Muhammad had created it, why would he want to collect it? If Muhammad, by 632, had already collated the Qur'an, why would Abu Bakr want to collate it? It's already been collated, okay? And he summoned this young boy, Zayd, and tasked him with the project, emphasizing the need to preserve the revelation. Well, obviously it had not been preserved. That's why he wants to preserve it now. And then again in Sahih Bukhari, therefore I suggest you, Abu Bakr, that's Umar, the Peter of Islam, telling the caliph, you know, you do as I say, mate. Therefore I suggest you, Abu Bakr, order that the Quran be collected. I said to Umar, how can you do something which Allah's apostle did not do? So Muhammad did not collect the Quran. And that's not my claim. That is in the top hadith, Sahih Bukhari. Where is the preservation of the Quran? Now you're into this mess of what goes in, what does not go in. People argue, yes, this is from Muhammad. No, this is not from Muhammad. So we've had three collations since the death of Muhammad. Some would say four or five. But I'm going to concentrate on the three. During the life of Abu Bakr, during the life of Uthman ibn Affan, and Al-Hajjaj ibn Yusuf, which is often forgotten. You heard about the two from Brother Femi. I'm going to concentrate on Al-Hajjaj ibn Yusuf al-Thaqafi. He was the governor of Iraq. He was very influential. He is the one who introduced the diacritics, the U-I-A, okay? And that makes a lot of difference. To the meaning of a word. But he also changed 11 texts. Okay? Where is the preservation of the Quran? This guy changed the text in 11 places. And then he did what Uthman did. He decided his version was the only version. So he made copies of it and sent it to all the big cities and destroyed all the other copies. So you see, that's the third collation. How could it be preserved when you've had to edit it three times and destroy the others? It means the others were not Allah's word. So the idea of multiple collations contradicts the concept of preservation. You can't have both. It's either the one or the other. But I need to say this about the first collation. How reliable could it have been? The committee was led by a youth, not by Muhammad's four trusted Qurra or reciters. Muhammad had four trusted Qurra. He said, if you want the Quran, take it from these four. First, Ibn Mas'ud. Secondly, Abdullah ibn Ka'b, Ubay ibn Ka'b, rather. And there are two others. Now, none of them were used. So how reliable is the Quran? How preserved? If you avoid the four most trusted, you cannot claim that your Quran has been preserved. And then it says that that one was kept with Abu Bakr, not with the people. What's the point of having a Quran that's not available to the people? And then when he died, he was succeeded by Umar ibn al-Khattab. Then he died and he gave the copy to his daughter, Hafsa. So when Uthman came, he asked Hafsa to return the copy of the Quran, and he edited it, and you know what else he did? He burned the others. Okay, so you had three recensions, the Bakrite in 634, the Uthmanic recension of 650 or thereabouts, and then Al-Hajjaj ibn Yusuf, 710. So we are roughly 100 years after Muhammad's revelation started, and we still do not have an agreed copy of the Quran. I'm going to skip these. I just want to emphasize something Brother Femi said. Then in 650, during Uthman's life, there were many copies of the Quran. So Abdullah ibn Mas'ud was the most trusted of Muhammad's Qurra. He had his own Quran. It was popular in Kufa, in Iraq. And he refused to burn it, by the way. So copies survived. When Uthman asked for it, He said, I ain't burning it. Copies were kept. Then Abu Musa al-Ash'ari in Basra. Then you had Ubay, the other of the four most trusted men that Muhammad commended. And they had different, one had 118 chapters, 11 chapters, another had 115, another 116. Which is it? Okay? If the Quran has been preserved, what was preserved? And how did you decide which chapters to include? So the third caliph, Uthman ibn Affan, was killed. Why was he killed? Was killed by Muslims. Why was he killed? One of the guys who killed him said, you have altered the book of Allah. You have changed the Quran. So this is the third caliph dying for changing the Quran. And I will talk about the preservation of the Quran. Your own history, my Muslim brother and sister, my neighbor, your own books tell me your Quran could not be preserved. People died for changing it, and you brazenly tell me it has been preserved. Right, so we can conclude the current Quran is incomplete. And one of the highest authorities in Islam, Ibn Umar, so most of the imams and scholars in Islam have relied on the tafsir from Ibn Umar, okay? Let none of you say, I have talked or I have taken all of the Quran. How does he know what all of it is? Much of the Quran has disappeared. This is one of the highest authorities in Islam telling you, you do not have the entire Quran. There's no such thing as the preserved Quran. You may have it up in heaven, but that's no good. It's not been preserved here. You only have some of it. Let him rather say, I have taken of it what has appeared or has been preserved. Okay? Aisha herself said, among what was revealed in the Quran was the stoning verse. She admitted that the nusakh, people who copied the Quran, made mistakes. Okay? Ubay ibn Ka'b, one of the most trusted four men that Muhammad commended, said, how many verses were there in Surat al-Ahzab? A companion replied, 73 verses. But he said, it was equal to Surat al-Baqarah, 286 verses. Okay? So why have these verses not been preserved? And that's in Musnad Ahmad, one of the highest authorities. This is not sourced from Christian books. This comes from Hadith, the second holiest scripture in Islam. Hadith tells us that some surahs of the Quran have been slashed by two-thirds. And you speak of the preservation of the Quran? That's a myth. The truth is Arabic was a primitive language. So when the Quran brags that it came down in Arabic, this is just a tribal boast. It makes no sense. If you want to start a campaign in Europe, what language would you use? Would you use Lithuanian? Huh? Would you use, I don't know, would you use Finnish? You wouldn't. You would use English. We are the best country in the world. No, seriously, you would use the most widely read language. So why did Allah choose to bring it down in Arabic when it didn't have a complete alphabet, didn't have any grammar? It didn't. It was underdeveloped. He could have sent it down in Hebrew, far more developed, or Aramaic, even better. So the boast that it was sent down in Arabic is not. It can't be divine. God, isn't that stupid? If you want to promote an idea, you use an international language and a highly developed language and a language that's easy to read and write. We had an Arabic language in the south of Arabia, in Yemen. Okay, it was highly developed. If you look at all the inscriptions that have been preserved, it had grammar, stable alphabet, no disagreements. So, and that tells us actually that the Muslim narrative is not reliable. Most likely, Islam and the Quran appeared in the north, not in Al-Hijaz, in Damascus, Most likely Neopetra, but that's another subject. So why do these diacritics that the third recension introduced, why are they important? Let me give you examples. Can you see these Arabic words? You see their meanings? They consist of three things. They consist of, I don't know if I can untie. Can you see the troughs, the shape? Like troughs, three troughs. Above them or below them, there are dots. That's called pointing. So if you have two dots above a trough, it's a t. One beneath it, it's a b. Three above it, it's a th, and so on, okay? And then you have these decorative shapes above. These are the diacritics. They tell you whether it is tu, ta, ti. Okay, they're called diacritics. Now, if you use all these combinations with one rasm, one shape, look how many variants you can have. So when you come to read the Quran with one shape, let's say this simple shape, look how many different meanings you can have. Okay, and you tell me it's a clear Quran, it's not clear. And because of this, it could not have been preserved. The qira'at you have heard about stem from the different ways in which you can read these shapes or develop these shapes, al-rasm. Does that make sense? So that's why you have so many different qira'at. And so the third recension was vital, it was necessary. They had no choice. So I've written a book called, I've translated the Epistle of Al-Kindi from the original Arabic with annotations and commentary in the footnote. You can have it if you have the QR. I can give it to you before you leave if you want. And one thing I noticed was Al-Kindi, he was invited by a colleague. Al-Kindi worked for the palace. He was invited by the cousin of the caliph to convert to Islam in writing. So he politely sent a reply, and that is the Epistle of Al-Kindi. It is beautiful, it is detailed. Basically, he questions the Quran, questions Islam, questions all their concepts. Roughly 900 plus, I may be. But let's see what he says about the Quran. Do you not know that Ibn Mas'ud, that is the most trusted Hafiz of Muhammad, whom your prophet called the most learned in the Quran, refused to include the Fatiha and the Ma'awidhatains in his codex, the two surahs, and that he refused to hand over his scrolls to Uthman. Okay? So it was known in those days. So when you see these Hatun and others, you know, it's not new knowledge. It's old knowledge, but we need to use it and develop it, okay? And what did Uthman do? He ordered them burnt. Then he says, and Ibn Ubay, or Ubay ibn Ka'b, too. That's another most trusted Qari. He had his own codex, okay? That's another Quran, which you know contained surahs that are no longer read. Were these from God? If so, why were they removed? If not, why were they never read at all? So, yes, why they ever read, yes. And then he's quite bold. He says, we're talking about boldness. He said, what kind of divine book needs such violent editing? Huh? Would a book from heaven require men to destroy all competing versions to preserve its truth? And he goes further, I won't quote him. Basically, he says it's not worthy of respect. So, is the Quran unchangeable? We come to the concept of qira'at and riwayat. So, Muhammad apparently said the Quran was sent down in seven letters. Nobody knows what that means. What does that mean, seven letters? Some say it means seven dialects. Now, a dialect can't actually be reflected in a script that has neither dotting nor voweling. Does it? You can't. Yeah? And why seven? I mean, Arabia was full of dialects. Why just seven? And if seven, why at the end, in the third recension, the Uthmanic recension, the second Uthmanic recension, the command to the committee was, if you differ about anything, put it in the language, dialect of Quraysh. Why not just do it in the language of Quraysh anyway? It was supposed to be the best language. Yeah, the best Arabic apparently was Quraysh, which again contradicts the life of Muhammad, where his mother Amina sent him to the Bedouin to teach him good Arabic because it is the best Arabic. So the Quran is full of Islam is full of contradictions. But so you have imams, I can't count five of them, who had their own preferred way, you know, codex of the Quran. You know, the Qurans differed. These are called qira'at. You know, it means readings. And each one of them had two riwayat, two ways of reading the same thing. What's the excuse? No excuse. Now, in later centuries, more qira'at and riwayat were added. Okay? It's the usual. More hadith, more seerahs. So you might say, okay, all very well, you know, what does it different, or does it matter whether there are riwayat or qira'at that differ? The point is that it changes the meaning. I'm going to give you just one example. I know you can't read Arabic, but if you look at the bottom line, you could see that one differs in the dotting and the pointing from the other. Can you appreciate that? The diacritics are not in the same place, nor are the dots. So the one, there's one which says inda, which means with. The other says abdu, which means slaves, or slave, or ibadu, sorry. Ibadu, slaves. So it's either with or slaves, and the word, the two words are completely different in meaning. So don't tell me that the qira'at do not change the substance of the... I can give you more examples. Because of these different qira'at and riwayat, this is just one website which has 23, not 24, Arabic versions that all differ you know, in this kind of... This is by Muslims. This is a Muslim website. And others would have more. Okay? You can go on this website and buy all these, order them. Yeah?
They have different texts.
Different texts, indeed. Yeah.
Hafs, yes.
Yes. Yeah. There are two famous qira'at. One is called Hafs, which is a dominant, particularly in the Sunni world. Warsh is common in North Africa. Particularly Morocco and such like.
We've got those copies in our library.
Yeah. Gabriel.
How can they be allowed to sell?
Exactly. That's what. Remember the word brazen Islam? They sell them and they say it has been preserved. Not a word, not a letter has been changed. Did you see how many words and letters have been changed? Okay. So the dilemma is. If they claim that not a single letter of the Quran has been lost and it remains exactly as revealed to the Prophet Muhammad, that is a huge claim to make, particularly when your own holy text contradicts that claim. Okay? Both. You have examples where just the diacritics and the pointings are different. There are deletions. You know, one will have a word that is not present in the other. They have additions. They have occasionally half verses missing, yeah, and often the meaning is changed dramatically. Not just sometimes the changes are synonymous, but not always. Sometimes the meaning is radically changed. Yeah, I'm going to repeat Ibn Umar. That's a significant statement by a leading Muslim scholar, the father of all Muslim scholars. Let none of you say. Dear Muslims, let none of you say, I have acquired the whole of the Quran. How does he know what all of it is? Because much of the Quran has disappeared. Let him instead say, I have acquired what has survived. Okay? There's no such thing as preservation. And that's, you know, it comes from reliable Muslim sources, Ibn Sa'd and As-Suyuti. Okay? So in conclusion, quoting Burton, he says the Quran was a product of a lengthy process of evolution. Okay? That's the only evolution I believe in, the Quran. Okay? Accretion and improvements. And as both Beth and Femi reiterated, it's been, you know, it's been edited even recently. My last slide. Yasir Qadi, that's what you're waiting for. Yasir Qadi is a brazen Muslim scholar. I think he was appointed to Yale because rich oil barons have bought our Western universities. This is a tragedy. Our Western universities, Oxford, Cambridge, Yale, Harvard, have been bought by rich Muslims. And you've got teachers in there who are brazen. We had one who in, help me Beth, in Oxford or Cambridge, who disappeared because he was abused of sexual abuse. Ramadan, do you remember him?
Tariq Ramadan.
Yeah. These people only get there because of Saudi money. They buy chairs, professorial. You know, £5 million could buy you a chair in Oxford. That's all it takes. So this guy, when he started out, he was quite brazen, you know, openly Salafi. He was a Salafi. You know, no shame. At the time, he said, the Quran we recite today is exactly the same as the Quran revealed to the Prophet Muhammad. You think he didn't know all we know after years of study? Because when you study Islam, you study your own text. So everything I've said today comes from Muslim text. You have to be stupid, I'm sorry to use that language, to go through all your learning years and make that statement unless you are brazenly deceiving people. The Quran we recite today is exactly the same as the Quran revealed to the Prophet Muhammad, letter for letter, my goodness. Talk about exaggeration and word for word. Then later he had to admit the issue of ahruf, that is the qira'at, the variations, the variants of the Quran, has vexed the ummah from the very beginning. Why didn't you say that 20 years ago? And this is not something we can just overlook, really. Of course you can't, because your own books say it. If you really respect hadith and the Quran, then you know that you cannot claim the preservation of the Quran as a doctrine. And later on he said, we have to be honest, multiple recitations, variant readings, even early codices show that textual history is more nuanced. Talk about euphemisms. More nuanced. And then he said to what's the name of the boy who was challenging him? Muhammad Hijab, the big Egyptian guy, who interviewed him, but he didn't realize it was being recorded. He said, if I give you a blank page, what would you write? Which Quran would you write? Warsh, Hafs, you know, which? And he basically was saying to him, look, this is a question you can't ask in public because, you know, some people are weak. Some Muslims are weak. They don't have strong faith. And he said, look, I discussed this with advanced students. If you want to come to my advanced classes, you're welcome. Weak, advanced, the truth is the truth. Yeah? When Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life, we teach it to all people, weak, medium, strong. We don't have advanced classes. The truth is the truth. He's asking you, which of these would you say? What would you write? We've got all these variants. How do you know which one is the word of God? And he's saying, oh, we can't discuss this. And he was getting really angry with him. And he said, oh, this is nuanced. And then eventually he admitted, look, the Muslim narrative about preservation has what? Holes in it. Holes. And our sister Hatun actually went to Hyde Park Corner with a picture of Swiss cheese with holes in it. She was teasing them. So I think the preservation of the Quran is either a delusion or a brazen untruth, to put it politely. And I hope we have given enough evidence. So what I've shared with you mainly comes from the Muslim narrative. I hope it's been helpful. Use it in any way God leads you to use it.